It's Friday! Hello, this is me, Alan O'Donoghue, techno teacher, T-E-K-N-O teacher, and...
Vicky Dodd, Vicky Vale, V-I-K-K-I-V-I-L-L-E.
And this is the podcast that we record each week, every Friday, all about the things that we've been doing with our GCSE computing classes. Vicky, why do we do this?
So others don't make the same mistakes that we make every week.
Yeah. I've been doing this for about teaching GCSE computing for 1 year more than you. So that means I've made 1 year worth of mistakes more than you have.
Well, I'm learning from your mistakes you made, and then I'm making new ones.
But I'm learning from your mistakes. And we've kind of got this, like, recursive loop thing going on.
Oh, yeah. That we iterate through every single week.
So I thought in this week's episode of our podcast that we could talk about some of the things. It's been a pretty busy week or so since the last one. We had lots of events.
We've been a bit manic, really, actually, for the past couple of weeks.
And I counted from Saturday to Tuesday. We had 4 events in 4 days.
Yeah, that's it feels like it though now.
We didn't have anything on the Sunday, but then we had 2 events on the Tuesday.
But then we've got a quiet week coming ahead, I think, haven't we? Have we? Those are something I've forgotten.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've actually got a
really busy week, but I'll mention that later. And then I've had an issue that I've tried to resolve with my class this week, and I've actually had some success with my year 10. And have you been doing anything with your year 9s and 10s this week?
My year 9s, I've been doing custom functions in Python. So, and the year 10s are continuing with their control assessment. But what I've found is that looking through, I was a bit concerned about the different programming techniques that they've been using. And I saw that not many were using custom functions. So that's why I went into it straight away with year 9.
So we talk about that in a little bit more detail. So we've got... Last weekend we had the Hack Jam, the first one.
Do you know, I've lost track. I don't know whether it was last weekend or the weekend. It was last weekend.
It was the 29th of June.
It was last weekend.
And we had, I counted afterwards, the sign-in sheets, we had 150.
Different people. Yeah. 150 different people came
and
through the doors.
Was children, parents,
children
families.
As young as 6.
Yes, yeah. There was 1 6-year-old girl. Yeah. And it just thought it was... Well, there was more than 1 6-year-old girl. Yeah. But one in particular... She went in and she hacked. Did you see that? She hacked
primary school website. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic.
And it said she changed the homework policy, so now it says that homework is only for boys in her school. Girl power.
It was really good.
And it was just like a taster event for people to come along and figure out what the week-long code camp that we're going to be running in the summer is like. And it was just such a fantastic experience. And although we did a lot of planning in preparation beforehand, the event anyway just kind of took care of itself.
It ran really smoothly in the end,
and we took lots of photographs and they're all online in a gallery.
They were really fantastic.
Ben brought was it Jeremy?
Jeremy, year 7. Jeremy,
I thought he was like year 10 or year 11.
No,
year 7. He was talking about PHP. Les Pounder was showing
he
him.
Was doing jQuery mobile, and he was doing he smashed JavaScript. He was then doing SQL as well. He was just going crazy.
And his parents came to collect him later on. They were just blown away because they were saying in that 1 hour a week that Jeremy has in school for ICT, there's just not enough time for him to indulge his passion.
And then he's got Mr. Smith's Ben does a 1 hour a week computing club as well. And they were actually asking for if there would be a weekly club that he could attend.
Yeah. So watch this space. And then, so that was on Saturday, and then it just felt like we crashed straight then into the Raspberry Jam on
Monday.
And again, although we had 36 people signed up, at one point I did a head count, we had 50 people.
Did we?
Including us two. That was at CPC, and I've just published a blog post about that today. That was your first experience of a dojo that we did at the Preston Raspberry Jam. We ran one the previous month, but we just did it at UCLan. So this one was at CPC.
Yeah.
And you brought Oliver along.
I brought my 7-year-old boy along. And at first he was a bit kind of, because he wanted to get stuck in. But then when he got hold of a laptop in Scratch, he was creating Frogger. And he knew what to do. He knew, you know, he got his way around the Scratch interface. I mean, he's not clear on the different programming techniques or what he needed, you know, what programming he needed to do to get things moving. But he could easily find his way around the paint editor, creating sprites, stages, and then moving through the different code blocks as well.
And this dojo, what we did was You were there at the start, weren't you? We came up with all the different ideas for projects. Then we voted on the most popular ones. And then we assigned all the teams off to rooms. But you were actually working in one of the teams.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I think adults, the adults there that are equally desperate to get things done and get into it as the children. So it's, it was interesting. It was really good.
And what I noticed was in some of the rooms, the children were leading it. And in some of the rooms, the adults were trying to lead it. But at the same time, sort of, let's get the children get involved.
Yeah.
But you could tell they were really eager to...
They really were. Yeah, yeah. More eager than the kids, I think, in some cases.
Yeah. And then but the thing I really liked at the end of the evening was we then encouraged all the teams to go around the other rooms to see what people had done, and they were all trying each other's games out.
Yeah.
And nearly everybody I spoke to said, well, I've been around to look at all the other teams, but I think our game is actually the best. And that they said that no matter what team they were in. And then that was Monday. And then on Tuesday, I had 26 teachers came to school to learn about programming with Python, but really
I'm just realising how busy we were last week, actually.
It's only a few days ago, gosh. So we had 20. I had 26.
No wonder we were exhausted.
I know.
By Friday. Anyway, carry on.
So we spent most of the morning working through, you know, the materials I've put on the CAS, the Computing at School community.
The Year 7 ones, yeah. The Key Stage 3 Python tasks.
That's right, how to create an artificially intelligent maths game.
Yeah.
So we used that mostly in the morning, and in the afternoon we tried one of the OCR GCSE computing tasks, and that was
big leap.
It was a little bit of a leap. You could tell with some people it was a bit of too much of a leap.
Yeah.
So we then split into two different groups, and we had one group working on the GCSE tasks and one sort of consolidating what they'd learned in the morning. And then just afterwards, about half an hour later, we then had our Computing at School Preston Hub meeting.
Yeah, we did.
The last sort of the school year.
Yeah.
And it's almost turned into like a social group now.
Well, I think that's how it needs to be a bit of both, doesn't it? Because we all get along so well, and you're getting the regulars coming every single time, and there is a social element to that. But then the networking bit and getting contacts is really important as well.
It's just lovely how it's turning into like a family almost.
Yeah.
There was people hugging each other and embracing each other, which is really nice.
We're exchanging email addresses.
Yeah,
like Shafika from my school, from Ashton, has definitely been networking, because obviously she's starting with the computing in September. And she's met Claire Ferguson Adam at Williams, and has started networking as well, which is, that's what it should be about.
And I mean, when I originally posted the dates for these CAS meetings, I thought it was going to be a bit of a hassle having them so regular and so frequent, but actually it's been really nice now, because we've had this regularity about them, the people have been coming along to the meetings, we're starting to use them. So like Ben did a session, didn't he, showing how you could use,
he tried, well, he didn't work so
had
well
some technical
him.
issues, but the Raspberry Pi with Minecraft,
yeah,
and Adam talked,
oh, he was talking about the hack jams, yeah,
how much his children got out of going
his
from his school
from Corpus Christi. They were fantastic.
And then that was Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday, you had a bunch of teachers
in. I did. Yeah. I had a group of 12 come in to do Code with Kodu, a Kodu course, and just an introduction to Kodu and creating games. Mainly Key Stage 2, primary, but there was three or four secondary teachers there as well, who are looking to get started with computing and were thinking that Kodu might be just a small introduction.
Now, I was busy teaching on Wednesday when you were in that course,
yeah.
But what I noticed, when they came in the morning, I don't know if some of them had really long drives to get there.
They were all really quiet.
Yeah, they were really quiet. They had really long faces. But by the end of the day, they were buzzing,
yeah,
smiling. And I came in to have a look at some of the games that they'd created in Kodu.
Yeah, they did. Well, we actually did like a Kodu Dojo. I actually took that idea from myself. And what we did at the end of it, after having, you know, a number of introductions and different demonstrations and tinkering with Kodu, that then, right, okay, we came up with a few vintage games that we could remember. Pac-Man, Pong, Frogger.
Sure.
And I forget, there was Space Invaders as well. And they were in groups of two, and they chose one, and then they had to work together to solve it and to create it.
Did you try the Driver Navigator?
You kind of found they were doing that anyway. But no, I think that's the next development point. But that worked really, really well, because then they were finding advanced ways of using Kodu. Not only were they consolidating what we'd done in the morning, they were then actually, oh, how do I do this? And they were asking, well, actually, you could do this, you know, like by, you know, this way or this way. It was really good, really good.
So on to the what we've been doing with our
GCSE. Must thank Tim Moore, Geek Moore, for the loan of his game pads. Thank you, Tim.
The Xbox game controllers.
The Xbox game controllers for Kodu, yeah.
And they were using them, they were plugging them through the USB port into
USB
PCs.
Controllers, yeah. Because then you can actually use Kodu and create the games using that rather than keyboard and mouse.
Yeah. And it's a lot more like the real gameplay,
yeah,
isn't
because
it?
Because you can obviously, you can get Kodu on the Xbox as well, so students can then put their games up on the Kodu community, download them onto their Xbox at home, so it makes them portable.
So this podcast really is all about teaching computing.
Yeah.
It's just been a busy week with all the events. And now, do you remember when we first started recording these? No, around about February time, I said that I was going to stop teaching theory so much in class and end up prescribing them as homework activities to free up more time to teach the programming in class. Because I'd found when we were doing the controlled assignments, the programming, they just didn't have a deep enough understanding. Mm. So I came up with this prescribed list of, over the next half term, these are all the homeworks that you've got to do. And we've been using Susan Robson's book. So they had to read the book, understand what was in the book, and then they had to use illustrations and the briefest amount of notes to record that. And then we test it every 6 weeks with a test that we do in class. Now, the last time we did a test, I collected in their books. And if you look at the spreadsheet I have online, it's at tinyurl.com/10ACO1. Well, if you look at the bottom on the homework tab, you'll see this progress. Like at the beginning of the year, most of the children were doing the homeworks. Partway through the year, less of them. And then the last one, which is a poll, and it was like loads of empty pages in the book. So I thought, I'm going to have to stop. So I should retrace, go, you know, back up a few steps to embed this practice that I was expecting from them with their homeworks again. So this week, really, that's what I did. I abandoned controlled assessments and programming. It was just, we did a flipped lesson. Because what we actually did was we did the homeworks in class.
Yeah.
So the way I did this was, I decided to make it, I wanted to make it really simple and accessible. So I said I had this theory, they could actually get away with spending 15 minutes on each homework if they really wanted to. So, I've got some books here. Let me just open one just to refresh my memory. So one of them, for example, was, there's a section in the book called testing. So I said, right, you've, everybody now in the class, you've got 5 minutes to read that section of the book. So some of them, bye. So some of them are reading it on the electronic version of the book. Some of them reading it as the paper copy. So using my timer on my phone, right, you've got 5 minutes to read. And some of them were trying to write. Nope, look. 5 minutes, just focus, read. And then after the 5 minutes, right now, open your exercise books. See, exercise book. Full page. And there's five things I'm looking for, and you're going to have 10 minutes. I'm looking for the correct titles. So our school has a policy about what they should have at the top of the page.
Presentation organisation.
Yeah, that's right, yes. You need the minimum of notes, like 2 or 3 sentences. I don't want any more than 5, and I don't want less than 2. I'm looking to see lots of illustrations, diagrams, but also I want you to highlight some of the keywords that are on there, like this one here.
Pixels, okay.
So let's see, 1, 2, 3, and there must be something else as well, because I counted 5 things altogether. So they had 10 minutes, so, right, and then I gave them, so like, right, you've got 10 minutes, you've got 8 minutes, you've got 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 1, and stop. Right, swap your books with a partner. Now, here are the 5 criteria. So we're not actually going to read very much about what they've written or judge the quality of the comments. This is the 5 criteria. So if they've got a title across the top, 1 point. Ah, if they've used at least half of the page, that's a second point.
Okay.
Because I wanted them to use the full page. The third one was they had to have between 2 to 5 sentences, no more than 5 and no less than 2. They had to have diagrams, and then they had to do something to highlight it. So they had to give a person a score out of 5. Now, I said, if you got 4 or more out of 5, you'd get a green marker next to your name on the spreadsheet.
Right.
So when we did it, it was actually really good, because I think everybody bar 5 in the class, 5 pupils, got 4 or more out of 5. So I then quickly polled the class, why did you not get one? Why did you not get the full five? And it was they hadn't used the full... So all right, now we're going to do it a second time. So this time we're going to look at IDE tools. So again, from the Susan Robson books, I've directed them to the page and I've said, right, 5 minutes again, read, summarise, same thing. And actually, this was better, the second iteration was better. Okay. And about everybody apart from two got 5 out of 5 on this one. And I said, wow, they were doing really well. Now, I said I was going to give them a reward. Every time they got a green marker next to their name, they get a reward for it.
And what's the reward?
So the reward was I was going to give them some free time at the end of the lesson. So if they had one marker, they got 5 minutes. And if they had two, they got 10 minutes. And so listen to music, watch YouTube. But they thought that was a reward that was worth, worth striving for.
I think that looks really good. What a really fantastic way of getting them to summarise everything for revision later on.
And then the following lesson.
Yeah.
So this was the next 2 days later. Mm-hmm. This would have been on the Wednesday. I thought, right, you know what? I was really impressed with what we did last lesson, but some people didn't quite get... So now we're going to give everybody a chance. And you know what? The third time we did it, everybody got 5 out of 5. Mm. And that was when I said, right. So we all know what's expected from the homework now. And you've proved to me now 3 times you can do each of these homeworks within 15 minutes. So there should be no excuses for people saying, oh, I can't do it. I don't know what to do. But it's getting them into that discipline of... you know, focusing on what are the key bits of information. So if I look at, this is Chris's book here. You see, similar thing again. They've highlighted, they're all getting 5 out of 5. It seems to be working. The next stage of testing now is...
Yeah, my year 10s, we haven't done a great deal of theory at all because their homeworks were Python challenges to practice at home. They had booklets on Python challenges. But what they will do, because they have 3 hours a week next year, is they will do some theory, 2 hours doing their controlled assessments and programming
week,
and things,
yeah.
And then another hour will be dedicated to the theory. They have we don't have the exercise books at Ashton. So they have their Wix on Wix.com, ePortfolios if you like.
WIX.com.
Yeah. So it's a website that they can upload animations, YouTube videos. So just thinking about that.
Is it just like an editor? Where they can just...
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just an online web tool. But they could do that really, do the same thing, but just not actually writing it down. And that would work well.
It would do. The reason why I decided, for a long time, we resisted using exercise books in class. But the thing I've noticed is they're using them in every other subject in school. And we've kind of come a little bit awry when they're doing like book checks in school and scrutinies and all these kind of things, because the children, they've got all these well-established systems within other subjects, but within ours. There's all sorts of reasons. I mean, maybe it's something we can talk about in a future podcast episode. But the other thing, because they're doing it in a book... They can't just copy and paste things and stick them in. They're actually physically having to take a pen out and write on the page. And now I do have plans to build in another level, which is what I've been doing with the Year 11s, which is I call it USA, Understand, Summarise, and an answer with exam questions.
I
think I need to... I've just gone back a couple of steps because I want to make sure we're getting back to 100% completion of homework, first of all, before we then add in more complexity.
So no, that looks good.
Now, you've not been doing so much a theory with your year 9s at the moment.
Year 9 and 10, we haven't done a great deal. Year 10, we've done the odd lesson, perhaps where Python, you know, they needed a break from programming just now and again, so we've done bits. Year 9 have barely done any theory. We concentrated purely on the programming this year because they at Ashton, we take their GCSE options at the end of year 8, start the GCSE courses in year 9.
Now, that's an approach. Yeah. I've been reading on some of the computing school forums recently that quite a few other teachers are advocating this approach as well, not to introduce the theory till later on, you know, because I think the programming is quite significantly different. If they've never done any programming in any language before, whether it's Java or JavaScript, Python, it is quite new. And if you've only got them 2 or 3 times in a week, you want to be building that up as much as possible, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget as well, now the new rule is that terminal assessments, all the GCSE courses have gone linear.
Yeah,
so they're not going to be sitting the theory exam right until the end of year 11. So you start teaching it at the beginning of year nine, then they've got 3 years later that they've got to recap all that, and that's just not going to happen. Whereas with the programming, it becomes habitual, because it's a bit like they learn it, and they then, it's like riding a bike in some respects, because they're actually learning the techniques, and they practice, and then it becomes almost natural to some of mine. It has now. It's something that they won't forget, I don't think, as long as they carry on practicing. I hope not, anyway.
So do you teach, do you work your way through like all the native functions in Python? Would you do like, we're going to start off with print, then we're going to look at input, then we're going to look at assignment, or...
That's what we did. We started off at the beginning of year nine. And the reason I chose to concentrate primarily on the programming originally, because that wasn't how I originally planned it to be. And I got 2 weeks in with year nine, and so I'd had 4 hours, and their typing skills were so poor because they'd only had 2 hours, an hour a week in years 7 and 8 of ICT. So some of them didn't know where a bracket was on the keyboard, didn't know where the colon was. They couldn't locate it. So their typing skills were so poor that the programming tasks that I'd scheduled or timetabled to take an hour a week could not be completed because
they were spending so long trying to find things.
Because it was just impossible. So that was one reason. And then I came to the conclusion, actually, to get this embedded and to get to ensure that they can remember this, and from week to week, this isn't going to work doing the interrupted theory as well.
So when you said typing skills, I thought you meant like they hadn't even got to like 60 words per minute.
No, they were doing single
60 characters a minute.
They were using just their index fingers to type, and you've got no chance. It was just taking forever. Wasn't possible.
How did you bring about change with that?
It was just continual practice with the programming, because what they realised is that, practice. They're doing 2 hours of programming every single week.
Yeah.
That's basically 2 hours of typing. I'm not explicitly teaching typing, I'm teaching programming where they have to type.
Are you giving them programming assignments to do, little tasks?
We'd have weekly different tasks, programming challenges that they had to do. We did the chatbot, we did the insult generator, we did a maths quiz,
we did
the capital city quiz.
All right.
We did the magic eight ball task, we've done hangman, we've done the guess my number, we've done a shopping list.
Whoa, slow right down there, lady. Slow down.
Okay.
Now, somebody's listening to this, they're thinking, this all sounds great. I want to be doing this. Is there somewhere that they can find these?
Everything is on the Computing at School resources website.
And are they resources that you've created yourself?
Yeah, mainly. Yeah.
So somebody went into CARS and in the search box Vicky Dodds.
Yeah, and then look at resources. It comes up. You can choose resources only, and then there's a big list of resources that I've.
You've become a little bit of like the resource queen for sharing things out.
I think there was it editor in chief.
You are. Right.
Yeah, manic resource creator and editor in chief.
I'd go along with the manic bit, certainly. Now, I discovered a little gem a couple of weeks ago. Do you remember David? You've not met David Whale. No, you didn't come to the York Jam.
I was rocking at Rockness.
So David Whale is a STEM ambassador down in Essex.
Right.
And he has a blog, whaleygeek.co.uk, I think it is.
I think I've been on that blog.
But he's shared online these... Python flashcards, you'd call them, and it's a freely downloadable resource. Say it's 2 or 3 pages of PDFs, and then you would guillotine it up. It's got like, it's even got like little registration marks where you can cut and crop it, and there's all these little, so it's like how you assign a variable in Python, how you do a count control loop in Python. And what he suggested doing was printing these out, laminating them, and like putting them in little boxes. And you can even say to children, you're trying to have try this card or try the other
one. We have those for Scratch. We have Scratch cards.
Yes.
I even produce.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, it was, where did I have them from? I forget who it was. There was a resource online. It wasn't Nikki Maddams, I don't think. It may have been. Sorry, Nikki, if it is. Some Kodu help cards as well. I used on Wednesday. So why not for Python, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good idea.
The only thing about these is, one he says, I think that, like Creative Commons, I think he's written them for an early version of Python, like 2.7.7. But, I even thought about giving those to the pupils I teach and saying...
Let's update them.
Because it's just syntax. And then it gives them a little bit more ownership. I mean, there aren't significant differences. It's mainly just putting
syntax,
the odd brackets in. Not odd bracket, but pairs of brackets, you know what I mean? So, So you've been practicing keyboard skills with your year
well,
nine?
Well, year nine, yeah. It was just because I discovered early on that there was really no point teaching the theory to them because they couldn't remember the programming skills from week to week, and the first thing I was going to be asking them to do was the programming control assessment, so that had to take priority.
Sure.
So I'll be leaving the theory till close to the exam, which will be probably in year 11, when they'll still have 2 hours a week and they should by then have completed both controlled assessments.
Have you tried getting children to create their own custom functions rather than just using the ones that are native?
That's what we've been teaching. That's
seriously
what we're doing this week, yeah.
I must be a mind reader.
You must be, mustn't you, Alan? It was because in year 10, doing their controlled assessments, I was looking through what they'd done so far for the, you know, the game, the OCR, yeah. The OCR controlled assessment, the game one.
Like
they start off with a dice,
counter,
don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
And then they do, they have to create characters and it's strength and skill. And I was going through what some of them had done already, and I'd noticed, I was getting a bit worried about the different programming techniques that they'd used and how there's only two of them who've actually used functions within their games or within their programs. And I was thinking, why? I've taught it. Why haven't they used it? So straight away I thought, right, I'm gonna introduce that to year nine because that was one of the only things I haven't done with year nine. So I decided, right, I'm going to introduce that, and then what I'll do is I'll keep on using them now. I'll introduce them, and then like I've done with everything else, I introduce it, and then I'll move, keep using it, repeating
sure,
it,
yeah.
But then add something else, keep using it, so then...
Iterating.
Yeah, you are. I think I've heard it called somewhere, the whirlpool method.
Oh, I've heard somebody else talk about, like, spiral... You got,
yeah, yeah, it's... yeah, and then
you're
there's... And obviously... scaffolding as well, yeah. Because basically what you're doing is you're adding on a layer each time, but you're still using the layers below, if you like, or what you've done
planks
previously
and poles.
Basically, yeah. So I decided to introduce custom functions, and we started off, we were doing I'll tell you what we did, the times table. They created a custom function that allowed them to ask what number times table you wanted, ask how what number you wanted it to go up to, and it generated the result.
Now, I can see that coming in really useful because if you've got children who you're really hoping to be awarding maximum marks to, there's an element where they have to be able to, you know, optimise their programming completely. Mm. And if, rather than repeating whole lists of lines with lots of functions in, by creating a custom function with their own, say, arguments within that as well, that's a way they can gain those extra
marks. Making
it
more efficient. That's where they gain the extra marks for efficiency.
Right.
But custom functions is not one of the basic programming skills or techniques that are mentioned within the OCR specification.
I don't think it specifically mentions it, but I think it's inherent because it mentions about how to be able to use strategies or processes to reduce, you know, to optimize their code. Now, next couple of weeks, we've got our next Hack Jam coming up on the 20th
of July.
It's
another manic couple of weeks.
Yeah. We're going to have, I've decided this next event, we're going to have a lot more creating as well going on. So, Rosie Pye and I yesterday, we went shopping and bought £100 worth of hammer beads. So, we're going to have lots of badges and coasters and all sorts of expect to see lots of Pac-Men and Mario moustaches.
Excellent.
And do you call them shrooms?
Yeah.
We're going to have loads of those. And then we've got our. Code Camp,
5th.
To the
You've got
August.
There the 5th till the 10th, but you'll find that young YRS
is... It's 5, 6, 7, 8 of August in Preston, and then the 10th and the 11th in Birmingham. Yeah?
12th.
That's the Sunday. It doesn't... Well...
The judging does occur
until Sunday.
Yeah.
Listen,
Alan.
We've got like a minute left. Let's not argue over things. We've also got Raspberry Jams coming up. We've got Leeds on the 13th of July.
Right.
Nikki Arthurs is running that over in Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got, I'm heading down to London on the 3rd of August. We've got the London Raspberry Jam. And do you know what? This week I've been talking to some friends at The Guardian.
Oh, right.
I'm going down to London on the 1st and 2nd of August.
I've seen this in your diary, yeah.
Oh, you've seen it?
I've seen it pops up on my phone. It tells me where you're going.
And I'm meeting up with Nick Tollervey and Carrie-Anne Philbin.
Oh, you're making up meeting with Nick?
Yeah.
Oh, I like Nick.
Yeah, everybody likes Nick.
Nick's lovely.
We're going to be having... And Carrie-Anne is, of course.
Oh, Carrie-Anne Philbin.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm jealous now.
And other flavors,
I've not met Carrie-Anne.
Other flavours of geeks are available.
Oh, right, okay.
But... It's going to be awesome. We're going to have 2 days of coding for teachers at the Guardian headquarters near K King's Cross.
Wow. Yeah. What's that for?
It's for teachers to help them feel more confident with just, it'll be all nice and calm and cool, and we're supporting teachers to learn how to program.
Well, how do teachers get tickets for that? How do they book places for it?
You know what? Maybe I should start blogging or tweet. No, I'll
you
start
need to do
tweeting
something about it. Yeah, yeah. How do teachers book on it?
We only agreed.
What do they do?
Look, search, ask me. I don't know. We only listed it on Friday.
Now, I've got. I have some. Oh, dear.